our biggest expense is marketing. So we spend a lot of money on ads. So just making sure that we're putting it in the right places and monitoring it. Like we're always reviewing our ad campaigns. That's what drives the business. Like you need the high converting website, you need great brands, but if you're not really active with inside your Google Ads account, then it doesn't matter. So yeah, that's what drives our sales.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
About 5 or 6 years ago, Joe, like if we had an e-commerce business, maybe even more than that, maybe 7 years ago, or right around the time you started at Quiet Light Brokerage, I remember like the hierarchy for e-commerce businesses. Right at the top was having a dropship business because people love the idea that you could set up an e-commerce physical products business, but never actually have to touch the product. Like, oh, this is beautiful. Today, they've kind of fallen out of favor. We don't see dropship businesses as often. And I think it's because people think that they're just kind of easy to spin up and then they get wiped out. But you had somebody on who is in the dropship world and loves it and is doing a great job.
Yeah, Anton Crowley. He's been doing it for about 20 years. He actually started in New York. He had a bakery route where he had a truck literally delivering bakery products to different retail outlets and set up a website and started drop shipping bakery products all around New York online back, 20 years ago. Fast forward to today, he really talks about the differentiation between owning a physical products e-commerce business and large amounts of working capital. Growing like crazy, you're taking all the profits, putting it right back in inventory. We know that story. Versus a dropship model. A dropship model, he really hones it in on the fact that it is mostly pure profit. You're focused on advertising dollars. That's important. Talked about the average ticket size and why it's important to be larger rather than smaller. And U.S. manufacturers and how to find them. Like you said, 5, 6 years ago, it was all the rage. I think it's a great model. To be honest with you, I think it's fantastic. It takes less working capital to get started. If you do your research and really focus in on some of the things that he's talking about, I think it's a great opportunity for somebody to start their own business versus buy. I know you had Amanda on a podcast about that. I think it's a great opportunity to go that route if there's not a ton of money for startup capital and you really don't want to do importing from China, which can be complicated.
Yeah, look, one thing I think about these ideas of fading niches and fading business styles is that if you find a business today that is in one of these faded business setups like dropshipping and it's doing well today, that's most likely a highly sustainable business. You know, we look at these things and we say, oh, well, dropshipping didn't work because it's just not sustainable for the long term. If somebody's been doing it and is doing it now today, then there's something sustainable about it. I would agree that, you know, the old model of just taking a product feed and throwing it up there, yeah, there might be some problems with that. But dropshipping is still viable if it's done right. So I'm interested to see what he's doing specifically for that sustainability and protecting against that competition and hearing how this is all working. This is fascinating. Again, this is kind of like a blast from the past, but how it works today. So let's get into it. Let's hear what he has to say.
Let's go to it. Hey folks, it's Joe from Quiet Light Brokerage. And today I've got Anton Crowley with me on the line. Welcome, Anton. How are you?
Doing very well, Joe. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here, man. You know the process. We talked about it just before the recording started here. Why don't you give the folks a little bit of background on yourself and what you do with Dropship Lifestyle?
Sure. So yeah, my name is Anton Crowley. Built my first e-commerce store way back in 2007. Started off then selling cookies online and basically just got into the business after reading, I think, a book that got most of the entrepreneurs I know started, which was the 4-Hour Workweek, and introduced me to back then Yahoo Stores and AdWords. So spent a week figuring it out and it worked. Since then, kind of been working my way up selling more and more expensive products and transitioning from what used to be an importing model to the dropshipping model.
1 week? You took the book 4-Hour Workweek, and in 1 week you got a listing up and running and a business off.
Yes, off and before that, I thought that e-commerce and building websites was like this big thing that took a team and $100,000 plus and all these just technical people. And that book, what all it gave me was you can go to yahoostores.com and spend $29. And the website was ugly. It was very ugly, but at that time had a delivery route for a bakery in Brooklyn, New York. So I had this idea that I could build a website. I had access to these bakery products. I figured out AdWords and just said, hey, like used keywords like New York bakery, New York cookies, and said, like, I think my little, you know, descriptions were like moved out of New York and miss New York bakeries, click here. And yeah, I started getting sales like almost right away on that.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I love it. I love the story and I love the action in terms of, you know, just doing it, getting things done. Didn't have to be perfect. If you waited for it to be perfect, you'd still be working on it for sure. I think I built my first site for $50. So congratulations, you got me beat. So, but you were actually physically owning the products in terms of the baking goods. And at one point you morphed into just dropship. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's funny. Actually, I was, I guess, technically dropshipping then, but what I had at that time, I was 21 years old, right out of school, and I bought a delivery route for a bakery in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
What I had basically was the rights to pick up boxes of cookies and sell them to a section of Long Island where I was living. And once I, you know, started this business, at first I was just shipping them myself, like literally having USPS pick up a bunch of boxes. And then I just said to the bakery, like, hey, can you guys just ship these things for me? And they said, yes. So that was drop shipping. I didn't know what it was. But after I was doing that, not for long, probably a few months, I just was thinking like, okay, I'm selling $20 boxes, $30 boxes, making like $10 per sale, if that, net. So why can't I sell something that costs $200 or $500 or $1,000? So my initial plan back then, or I guess my plan of action, what I did was go on eBay, look at completed listings, and just looking for things that sold consistently, I'd buy at now prices. Basically identified some items, still didn't know what dropshipping was, so found a website, Alibaba.com, and started importing. So I did that probably for 2 or 3 years, import only, bringing in, you know, dozens of containers from China to Long Beach in California, and all my e-commerce stores back then were on that model. As I did that, again, after a few years of traction and doing really well, growing, like doubling over year over year, I actually started to have companies reach out to my stores, and they would say, hey, we saw your website, we see you sell these things, we make these things, do you want to sell ours? And they basically introduced me to dropshipping, because they explained, you don't need to buy this, you don't need to put it in your fulfillment center, you can just list these products, you sell them, we'll ship them for you.
Let's define that then. Let's, for people that don't have the experience that you and I have, go ahead and define dropshipping and how it's different from owning your own brand and physically owning the products and shipping them yourself.
Right. Dropshipping really is like a high level term. So if you Googled it, you could find probably 10 different business models that technically would be dropshipping. The way that we do it is basically we consider ourselves internet retailers. So the way I like to describe it is if you went to, you know, a shopping mall, and let's say you went to Dick's Sporting Goods, right? They're a retailer. You go there, you buy Nike shorts and maybe Callaway golf clubs and, you know, whatever brand makes kayaks, and they sell other people's products. So that's how we do drop shipping. So again, instead of building a site, and let's say, you know, I have a sofa behind me. So instead of making sofas or private labeling sofas, we would just go out there and find the top 50 or 100, whatever it is, sofa companies for us in the US, because that's where we do business. We would reach out, we would say, hey, you know, we see your products and we own this site, we would like to sell them. And the arrangement on the dropship model is they give us their full product catalog, they give us all their descriptions, their SKUs, their images, they just give us all the content. And then us as retailers, it's our job to make them look good on our websites, basically make sure we're taking care of customers. And then of course, our job is to drive visitors and then turn those visitors into customers on our online retail stores. Again, the difference is I wouldn't ask those 50 sofa companies, can I buy 10 of all your best-selling products and ship them to my warehouse? I would just get the sales on my website. After the sale is made, the order gets forwarded to whatever brand it is. The brand ships it direct to consumer. So again, your job as a, in the way that we do it, your job as a drop shipper or internet retailer is to build a good store that has great product descriptions, that actually has existing customer service, and that gets really good at finding buyers, bringing them to your website.
Yeah. So you touched on some things that I think are advantages of dropship over owning your own brand, but I want you to go ahead and give me two or three there, and then we'll talk about them for those listening in the audience.
Definitely. So back again, let's maybe 2008, 2009, when I was only importing, basically I was limited in terms of growth, in terms of revenue, because every time I placed an order with China, I had to put down at least 30% before the container got to California. I had to pay the balance.
A container. I mean, we're talking about, you know, a tractor trailer load size of products.
So there's going to be things,
a lot of money there.
Great ships. Yeah,
that's right.
Big things and a lot of cash. And basically, that's what happened. Like, our growth back then was limited based on how much cash I had. Again, I had like only I had what was coming in. So there wasn't a bankroll sitting there that I could draw from. So basically, yeah, that was an issue. And then also, if I wanted to add new products, back then probably had between 10 and 20 different SKUs. So I couldn't just say, I want to sell you know, I want to double the amount of products we offer and sell those. I just didn't have that option because, again, it was cash prohibitive.
Number one might be, I mean, if someone is starting out on their own and they don't have a whole lot of working capital,
yes,
they may seriously consider drop shipping versus, you know, finding, building, designing, private labeling their own brand and then ordering some from, you know, definitely, an overseas country. So working capital, if somebody's strapped, doesn't have a, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to start off with. Okay, gotcha. What kind of working capital do you think the, you know, an average drop shipper that's, you know, someone that you train needs? What's the ideal situation? So
it depends. Like, it depends if you want to outsource things. Like, again, like when I first started, I built all my own websites and I, you know, created all my own ads and I wrote all my own emails and I did that all myself. So if you want to be the type of person, or if you are the type of person that does all the work, it really doesn't cost that much as far as a budget. Maybe honestly, like $1,000, $2,000 in the high end is like, that's okay. Again, if you're willing to do the work. If you do want to outsource things like uploading products and, you know, having unique descriptions and having content created for your website, I wouldn't recommend outsourcing ads at first, but if you wanted to do all that, then maybe, you know, $10,000 and you can get set up with a nice looking store that's pretty much ready to go.
So drop shipping is not dead, right? You know, I just, before we started recording, we've just had a very attractive drop shipping site go under contract in the mid, you know, million and a half range, actually. Most people that are out there looking for a business think physical products and own their own brand so that they can, in many cases, they do it on Amazon or Shopify store. What are the disadvantages that you've experienced by being a drop shipper versus owning your own brand? And, well, owning your own brand, you still own the customers as a drop shipper, but what are the disadvantages?
So we've done it both ways. And what's good too, we could talk about this, but if you are, again, we'll just keep using the sofa example. If I sold for 50 different sofa brands and I had a, you know, successful store, I would know what the top 20% of products were. I would know what sells the best. And then again, what, you know, I used to do, I don't do this anymore. I'm planning, actually, my move to Charlotte is to get back into this. But what we used to do was introduce our own brands then on our website. Basically just, okay, we have 50 brands. Now we have 51, one of them being ours, where we could sell our versions of the top products and maximize profit there. So that's the biggest advantage. If you have your own brand, the margins just simply are higher. You can make more money because you're not paying for someone else's brand equity, basically.
Okay, gotcha. That makes a heck of a lot of sense.
Yeah, the other one is usually, I mean, you could speak about this, but sale price. If you want to sell your store and you have your own brand, that could be a bigger package. It could be more valuable to a buyer that wants that, but that would be another advantage.
Maybe. You know, there are a lot of advantages and attractive features about dropship. Number one, the working capital required. A lot of the people that own their own brands and launch their own business with a brand starting out, they do it bootstrap. Maybe they don't have, maybe they've got 5,000 instead of 1,000 or two, like you talked about for dropship business. But every ounce of profit that they make, if the business is growing like crazy and they're just trying to keep up with volume of orders and inventory so they don't run out, what I see is for 24 months, they're taking all the profit and putting it right back into buying more inventory. And there's hardly any left over for them. It's discretionary earnings, it's taxable income because they're buying a lot of inventory, but they don't get to pull a whole lot out of the business. And I sense that, you know, with a drop shipping business, and I've seen it, there's a lot more free working cash flow because you're not actually buying that physical product until you've taken the order and have the money hit your account, right?
Yeah, and that's the beautiful thing. So like you mentioned with, you know, building your own brand and constantly having to reinvest if you're growing to purchase more products, typically with that, the payday does come when you sell the business. That's when you get all that money out. Because the business value grows, but your cash flow doesn't, or your free cash flow. And with drop shipping, yeah, if you do this the right way and you're working with the right type of suppliers, and of course, you're not overspending on traffic, you really do control your costs. So most of your costs are variable. So, you know, having, even if you're reinvesting like a little bit more into traffic and trying to raise your budget, it is realistic to have a 20% net profit every month in cash that you can then again determine what you want to do with. Do you want to invest it into your business or do you want to take it out? So cash flow from day one is much, much higher than when, again, you're trying to scale your inventory.
Okay. So let's talk about, I want to start a dropship business. I'm convinced I want more cash flow. I'm not worried about a big sale down the road, although they are very, very sellable businesses. How do I find the products? How do you find, you know, manufacturers that are willing to allow me to sell their products on their behalf?
Yep. So as far as finding products, there's so many things out there, but basically what we look for some general rules of thumb, is expensive products. Our average sale price, we want to be usually $1,000 or more. We do sell products for less than that, but that's the average order value we're looking for. We also look for different product types where customers really don't care what brand they get it from. So an example I sometimes give is, let's just say someone heard, oh, you know, $1,000 product price. I want to sell televisions or high-end gaming monitors. Well, I would say that's a bad idea, because if someone wants to buy that, they're going to buy a Samsung TV or a LG monitor, and that's not a company you'd get approved to sell. But if you wanted to sell something like sofas or bookshelves or any of these product types, you know, no one says, I want this brand name sofa and I have to have that. So things that, yeah, there's really not brand loyalty, that definitely helps. And things where there's a lot of possible variations or colors. So another example I give is chandeliers. So someone buys a new home, like we're trying to do now, you want to replace the lighting fixtures. If I want a chandelier, I can go to Home Depot and Lowe's and see what they have. But if I see something on Pinterest or Instagram and I want this specific size and color and amount of bulbs, like I'm not going to find that at a local store. So I'm trying to like stack the cards in your favor by going for things where customers are usually drawn online to begin with to make those purchases.
Okay.
Not so drawn online to search for, you know, a new iPad, but something generic.
Right. So something generic with a high ticket item. Mm-hmm. But how do you find those manufacturers?
Yep. So Google. I mean, that's really what we do. And one of the tips I could tell people not to do is don't look for dropship suppliers online, because when you go that route, what you're going to find is directories and middlemen that typically charge like a monthly fee for access to their products. They really are middlemen. What you want to do is always get approved directly with the brands that you're selling for. So you don't want to go through a distributor if at all possible. You definitely don't want to go through anyone that calls themselves a dropship supplier director or anything like that. Again, going back to the sofa example, I would go on Google. I would type in, you know, whatever I wanted to sell, maybe three-seater fabric sofas. I would go through Google. I would open every website in a different tab that sells them. I would look for either a page called brands or manufacturers or suppliers. And I would go ahead and then open or make a document with every company name I found there. And basically, I would work off that list. So I would build my own list of, not again, like I wouldn't call them a list of drop shippers. I'd call them a list of brands that manufacture sofas. And then I would reach out to them old school by picking up the phone saying, hey, this is Anton from antonsofas.com. I found your website and these products look like they'd be a great fit. And who can I speak to about getting approved for an account and take it from there? So yeah.
How do you convince them to allow you to be a drop shipper when you haven't built a website first?
We build the website first. Yeah, we do. So yep. If I was getting into a new industry, let's just again, sofas, I build the website, I would upload maybe 5 or 10 stock images. Everything else would be finished though. You know, the about us page, all of the, like we'd have blog posts up there, the whole thing, the phone number would work, the live chat would work. And then when we spoke to them, we would say, basically we're launching this website on whatever it is, you know, March 1st. And our plan is to work with X, Y, and Z companies. So mention some of their competitors that make sofas that probably well-known and respected. And we could say our plan is to launch with, again, these companies. We'd love to have you on board. We think that your product, whatever it is, XYZ that we found on their website, would do really well. If they ask, tell them a little bit about our previous experience, how we're going to get traffic, tell them about how customer service is everything with our business, and kind of go through the things that we know that they're looking for and the things that they're also the things that we know we have to do to make the store successful.
Okay. So build a website. Yep. Find the product and then start the marketing. And we'll get to that in a second. So in terms of building the website, do you have examples on dropship lifestyle of what one looks like that would be an ideal one to build?
We do. We have a bunch of different links. I could send you some to check them out. But I think one of them that we have live now is enlightenedchandeliers.com. So if anybody wants to check that out, we also have happypawsdogstore.com. So those are websites that are built on Shopify using the dropship lifestyle theme that we had built. And they just show, like, again, what the site would look like at that stage when you're ready to start contacting suppliers, get approved and turn it
around. So you answered one of my other questions, which is which platform do you prefer? And It sounds like Shopify. Okay.
For 99% of stores. Yeah.
All right. So you've identified the niche that you want to go into. You build a website, then you find the manufacturers and develop the relationship and bring their catalogs into your website. How do you go ahead and find the customers and market the brands?
Yep. So our favorite way is still through Google Shopping by using Google product listing ads. Those are the ads, if anybody goes on Google and types in a product name or even just usually a general niche name, you'll see the little images of different products. It'll show the product price. It'll show the store name. So we advertise there. And then also if you search that on Google and click shopping, you'll see all the ads there. And it's just always been like back in the day, I think when I first started, it was called frugal.com. And like, that's always been our highest converting source of traffic. So we focus on not just having our products there, but really optimizing our product feeds to make sure that we are getting a good ROI. Because the biggest, since again, all of our expenses are variable, our biggest expense is marketing. So we spend a lot of money on ads. So just making sure that we're putting it in the right places and monitoring it. Like we're always reviewing our ad campaigns. That's what drives the business. Like you need the high converting website, you need great brands, but if you're not really active with inside your Google Ads account, then it doesn't matter. So yeah, that's what drives our sales.
So that initial $1,000 to $2,000 that you thought was a big budget initially, does that include the advertising budget when you launch?
Most of that would be going in there. And this is another good thing I should have mentioned earlier, but speaking about how these are cash flow businesses, with the way that we do advertise, again, the majority of the time, it's either coming from a Google product listing ad search where someone's searching for a brand name, a product name, or a SKU number, or it's something that we optimize for on our website where they're searching again and they're finding us organically. But by the time people find us, they're typically trying to figure out, where am I going to buy from? Basically, they know they want product XYZ and they're looking to figure out where they should buy it from. So we do a bunch of stuff on our websites to have them choose us. But also by the time they click one of our ads, they're either going to buy or not buy, typically in like 3 to 5 days. So it's not like we're spending whatever, $100 today and hoping it comes back to us 2 months from now. Spend the money now. And if we're not ROI positive within a few days, then turn it off.
Let me just summarize and differentiate the business model between owning your own physical brands, folks, and the dropship store. Again, I just want to wrap it up and summarize it here. Not wrap it up, but summarize. So building the shop, you're building the store. You're spending a total $2,000 budget all in, and that includes advertising. With a physical products brand, you're doing that as well. But you're ordering the product from, let's say, China, for instance, waiting for that product to come in, putting it up on Amazon, spending some money to get traffic either to Amazon from Facebook or some other source, and doing sponsored ads in Amazon. So far we've spent. And then you're going to get paid out every 2 weeks from Amazon. Your advertising budget, they're going to take and, you know, bill your credit card once a month. With dropship lifestyle or dropshipping, you're not spending any money on product. You're building the website and you're doing the marketing campaign. And it sounds like if somebody's going to take, you know, you're going to start getting orders right away after a few days, weeks of advertising. Again, even your advertising budget is with your credit card, and you're not getting, you don't have to pay that depending upon the timing of the month when you launch for another 30 days. So you're getting the revenue from the sale before you have to buy the product. And you're just sending do you send an invoice, an ACH wire, or do some of your manufacturers take a credit card as well?
Most of them are credit card. So whenever we can, we go credit card. And so yeah, the points, if anybody's into that, is amazing. I haven't paid for travel in like 12 years. So want to use rewards cards.
There was a time when I was spending, the highest I ever spent was $50,000 a month on Google AdWords when I had my business. And we furnished our house, we took vacation. Everything with the points. Now, let me just talk to buyers and sellers, particularly sellers out there, when it comes to points, something like this. If you've got a dropship business and you're doing it this way that Anton's talking about, if you are, you know, spending $100,000 a month on inventory and advertising, of course, you're getting paid for it in advance. Mm-hmm. So, but if that's 100,000 points, if you use a point converter or a cashback credit card, that is what's called an owner benefit. Anton, I want you to pay attention to this and talk to all the folks that you train.
Okay.
That is an owner benefit that you should track, because if and when you sell your business, it needs to be added back to the add back schedule as an owner benefit and can boost the overall value of your business. I just launched one recently and he travels the world and does it all with, no, I'm sorry, he buys all of his inventory with credit cards. And that gives him an enormous amount of cash back. I think it was something like, let's call it $25,000 cash back over the course of the trailing 12 months. If your business is listed at a 3x multiple, everyone, that adds $75,000 to the overall value of the business. For buyers, if you're looking at businesses and you're looking for some instant equity, if a broker didn't list cashback points or anything like that, and sometimes you've got, like Anton said, travel, you can convert those. With our American Express, we've got a certain number of points, and we can convert that to cash. That's the amount we're talking about. But that could be instant equity in a business for a buyer. If you're taking over a dropship model and your broker didn't do that, or the broker that listed the business didn't do that, you can go, okay, how much are you spending? What kind of points? You know, are you using credit cards? Do the math, and it's definitely instant equity. Okay. Sorry, long rant there. The biggest thing for me, Anton, when I'm talking to buyers and mostly sellers, and I'm going to say this for the folks that are listening, the biggest mistake you can make is not pay attention to the details of your financials and documentation. A little thing like that. We all work so hard when we've got our own businesses to drive top line revenue. I'm doing this many millions in revenue. That doesn't matter as much as the bottom line number. And when you pay attention to that, that actually brings more value when you do decide to exit your business. Okay, Joe's done ranting. All right, so other than Google Shopping, what other marketing channels are there in terms of paths to growing the business itself?
So the ones that I'd say use every time. So it varies. So you find some industries where there are certain placements, but whenever we're building a new store, we will be, obviously Google is our number one. Organic traffic is big. We used to invest a lot of money into it, trying to rank major keywords. We don't do that anymore. What we do now is just focus on site and make sure that all of our product pages, especially once we know which our top 20% of products are going to be, we make sure those are extremely unique and optimized, because that's just free clicks and free sales. So organic is big for us. Bing, believe it or not, we advertise, it's probably 10% of our overall marketing budget.
I'm not sure if I believe it or not. Okay, 10%.
Yeah, we're putting some money there. There's people, okay. there's sales. We can't scale it. Every time we try to scale it, it breaks, but at a small budget, it works. Facebook, we are big on, but only for remarketing. And the reason being, we do sell high ticket products. So to put an ad for, you know, a chandelier in front of someone that likes, I don't know what, interior design, they're not going to buy it. So retargeting, though, we are big there. YouTube ads actually work really well for us as far as remarketing also. And then one of our other ones, that budget depends on what industry we're in and what's out there, but advertising on other content sites that already exist. So you can call it influencer marketing, but it could either be a business website, a content site, could be someone's personal content site, but either doing like paid promoted articles or taking out ads in the sidebar, either way, but trying to form relationships with people that already have the audience there, and then paying them to either have them talk about us or to allow us to put a little banner on their website.
Gotcha. And a lot of the stuff that you just talked about, we've had guest experts on that, you know, do YouTube ads or might do influencer marketing and things of that nature. Are you generally finding the people that you work with managing all of this themselves early on? Or, you know, how do somebody that doesn't have the expertise to do that, what are you advising them to do?
Typically, if they're starting from scratch and they want to build the business, and with this type of business, I don't recommend hiring anybody from day one. I recommend like learning, at least do it yourself and get it profitable. And then, okay, look for someone that might want to, you know, run your content side of the business, or look for an agency that can manage your AdWords. But I really, for most people, when they're starting, I say do it yourself. It's easy to throw money away. And I made this mistake early on with my e-commerce businesses. You know, we were profitable, but when I look back, I spent all this money and like fees into all these companies, and I didn't know enough to know that I was grossly overpaying for a lot of things. So yeah, lesson learned.
That's the beauty of experience and age and wisdom, right? You get to remember all your mistakes and what you might have done differently. Talk to me about Amazon. Anybody got dropship businesses that are reselling on Amazon? And if so, how do you do that?
I'm sure the answer is yes. I'll tell you, we don't do any dropshipping on Amazon. I used to advertise there back when they allowed Amazon product ads to go to external sites, but that's been gone for a few years. Yeah, there's some people that I work with, some of our students at Dropship Lifestyle, that have their own dropship stores that do what I spoke about earlier, where they'll introduce their own brand into the mix of their dropship store. And typically when they do that, they'll also have their products on Amazon, because they know that people, at least a percentage of them, will also go to Amazon and look there. With the type of brands that we work with, typically when we are getting approved to sell for them and we're signing the agreements, one of them says that you're not going to sell on third-party platforms, like companies like eBay. They don't want us to sell there. Same thing with Amazon. Reason being is because if they're going to have their products there, they usually do that internally. A lot of the times, because the items are usually expensive and large and heavy. They're not the type of items that people are private labeling and putting them on there. So it's really, at this point, I'm sure this will change in the future, but at this point, it hasn't been a huge factor because I think our price points are higher. And again, the items are usually like too big to be sending over to FBA and paying storage fees. The numbers don't work at this point with that model.
Do you foresee any danger as a dropshipper that the Amazon business model is going to be a challenge for dropshippers because those manufacturers can go directly to them? And guys like me, anytime I want to buy something, I go to Amazon first.
Yeah, I do. I'll say at this point, I'm not like freaking out like, oh my God, like we're done. But I do think that 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if Bezos gets what he wants, then Amazon will have the entire market share of everything. So I've talked about this before, but I think like, we'll see, like that's definitely where they want to go. I think they're pretty upfront about it. So unless someone else steps in or unless the government breaks them up from getting too big, then yeah, we'll see what the market looks like. Again, I don't think it's coming anytime soon, but maybe call it 10 years. We'll see what things look like then. But I'm in no way confident that they're going to just back down and say, we have enough. They're not about to stop.
Yeah, well, I think your approach to larger ticket items that higher value, not easy to ship, not easy to store it at an Amazon warehouse would kind of eliminate. They can't have everything, right? I mean, Jeff.
They're not now, and they haven't. Because they've taken over pretty much every market in that, call it like $100 sub-price product range, and even electronics. Like I buy some of my electronics from them. But as far as the types of products that we sell, it's been that one like area that they haven't really stepped into, at least not in a big way. Like they sell basically, at this point, they sell cheap versions of the stuff that we sell. So, if you search for like a lot of the brands we sell, they won't sell for those brands, but they'll sell like an inferior type product, I would say, at this point.
Gotcha. I know that, I say the first place I go is Amazon and I rarely buy anywhere else but them. But when I find a certain brand, I will go to that website and I would certainly buy from them. And I know my wife, will certainly buy from the brand manufacturer. Or in many cases, we built a house 3 years ago and she was that person looking at, 30 different websites for the lighting fixtures and probably brought from one of you guys at one point.
Probably, yeah. But for anybody that's like thinking about that and kind of like worried, like, well, yeah, that probably is going to happen. I think one of the biggest things you could do is look at sites now that are, I would say going above and beyond, like don't do the bare minimum as far as content and as far as usability and as far as like just everything, the whole experience. One website that I buy from all the time is bnh.com. They sell, photo and video equipment, and they do have a huge store and warehouse in the middle of Manhattan, but most of their orders now are online. And I think all that stuff that I buy from them, I could buy from Amazon, and I buy from Amazon all the time, but I like the experience there better for that type of product. So if anyone wants inspiration, check out B&H and see how they do things. They do a great job.
Excellent. Well, I think this whole podcast has been inspirational for those that, are looking to build an e-commerce business, in this case, specifically drop shipping. It's a great alternative to the risk and cash outlay of building your own brand. Any last thoughts in terms of, what the benefits are, or anybody should think about in terms of drop shipping versus e-commerce?
Yeah, I think for anybody, even if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, that sounds good, but I already have $500,000 in the bank and I just want to build a brand, I still think you could do both simultaneously. And it's a great idea to start with the dropship model in whatever industry you want to private label or manufacture in. Start dropshipping, build the website, build an audience, get sales, see what people buy, see what they like and don't like about products. You'll have all that market data, you'll be making money, and then you can go ahead and start your own brand with all that information and really increase your chances of just, hitting a home run with it.
That's great. Anton, your website is dropshiplifestyle.com. You're helping folks understand the dropship model. What's the best way for them, anyone to reach you that wants to chat? Should they just go to the website? Is there anything else?
Website, dropshiplifestyle.com, click contact, and everything is linked up off there.
Fantastic. Appreciate your time today. Look forward to doing business with you in the future.
Definitely. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast. For more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.